Hey everyone, it's Tanner. Sorry about this, but my audio is fucked again on this episode. It's not that bad, but it's a bit burnt out. Hopefully it's tolerable for you to listen because there's some funny shit in this episode and I think you'll enjoy it. Suck it up. I assure you it'll be fixed next episode. Enjoy. You're listening to the All Caps Podcast, episode 54 for the week of Monday, November 29th, 2010. In this episode, we discuss climate change, the beach, Power Wheels, Wild and Crazy Kids, The Rocketeer is Someone's Final Thought, Arsenic is an Element of Life, Mac and Me Masturbating, WikiLeaks, Net Neutrality, P.T. Anderson, The Dark Knight, Steam, Modems, Candy Made for the Already Dead, Zork, Leather Goddesses of Phoebus, Doppler Radar, Morgan Freeman's Freckles, Muzzle Loading, and a whole lot more. For more information, please visit www.allcapspodcast.com.
Hi. I'd like a keg of beer, please.
You don't say.
Yeah, how much is that?
Your ID, sonny. You little bastard just won't give up, will you? Listen, no ID, no goddamn beer. Can't you get that through your thick skull?
Give me a keg of beer.
And these.
All Caps Podcast, your source for news, politics, culture, all varieties. I'm one of your hosts, Tanner Higgin, podcasting out of a desert in Southern California.
And I'm your other host, Chris View, podcasting out of Detroit.
And I want to start with getting something off my chest that's been really, really bothering me lately. And I think it's because of...
It's a giant cum load.
The amount of coverage that NPR has been giving this. And it's this notion that climate change doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And the fact that this is an actual debate that's going on in this country is starting to just infuriate me on an unhealthy level. Because, of course, in NPR's defense, they are very clearly, you know, even though NPR is trying, especially in today's political climate, to try and stay in the middle, mm-hmm. NPR is clearly baffled, and their commentators are baffled at the fact that this is even an issue where we have to convince people that climate change exists, especially on Science Friday. Ira Flatow is his name, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He is particularly incensed, and you can just... Even though he's not allowed to say deniers are fucking morons, it's in his tonal inflection when he discusses the possibility of Republican candidates or newly elected Republicans that disbelieve in it. And the fact that they've invited almost all of them onto the show and they refuse to come on. But I cannot wrap my head around the fact that there are, I think if you look at the polls, it's almost half and half people who understand climate change is a real thing. And I'm trying to avoid the term believe, because this isn't an issue of belief, it's fucking science fact that you either acknowledge or don't. So there's 50% acknowledge the fact that climate change is happening and that we caused it and we are fucked. And then there's another half, and really half of this country that isn't acknowledging this fact. And it becomes really obvious to me when I'm driving around in this hickish town I'm living in, where I'm surrounded by commuters in pickup trucks and SUVs, and I look at these people, and I hate them instantly when I see them. Like, literally, in my chest, there's hatred that rises up. Because these people that are driving around in these trucks and SUVs that are causing this climate change to happen are largely responsible for it. These people are complicit in our own destruction. as they drive around. We are living in amazing times right now.
Because
we are at the precipice. I think the research that I've been reading, around 2060 is when shit is going to hit the fan hardcore. And we're at the point where we can't stop it. 2060 and beyond, shit is going to get real. And real fast. I mean, droughts are going to happen worldwide. There's going to be famine, fucking rising sea levels, sinking large populations. There's going to be a lot of displacement. This shit is already happening. And we can witness the morons who are driving around and basically having a direct hand in what might end up being the destruction of the human species in some sense. This is fucking profound that this is occurring while I'm alive when I think about it. And that I can be here in this historical moment when people, you know, centuries from now, look back and say, this is the moment when we fucked ourselves.
Yeah.
There was this turning point. We are living in that time and we can see people around us who are, say, slave owners in the 1800s. We can see the people who are on the wrong side of history as we're living through that history. It's the same issue with the gay marriage debate. It's right. So fascinating when you can see that. You can see people who are wrong.
Well, yeah, and even with the most recent Don't Ask, Don't Tell stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, the Pentagon coming out. I mean, the Pentagon comes out on the side of repealing it, and you have these people who are just completely bigoted and anti-gay, who are like, "There's just no way a fag can be in a foxhole with me," you know, that kind of thing.
And doesn't it amaze you how people can't recognize
their
bigotry?
Yeah, well. But it goes to deeper, it goes to even stupider levels, because now they're starting to do things for the sake of doing it. And what I mean by that is, I was reading a story, in fact, I tweeted something about it today, but I was reading a story about how the Tea Party, because, you know, let's be fair, they're the ones who are really radical. I know that there's Republicans who are like anti-climate change or anti-global warming or whatever, but They weren't as vehemently retarded about it, I guess. These people are just taking up stances for the sake of having a stance that's against what I might believe in, because I am completely, you know, not on their same wavelength as far as politics goes. But, for instance, I was just reading a story about how they're now targeting sustainable development to include mass transit.
A lot of programs, Crunchywide, are possibly getting killed because of that Tea Party wave.
Yeah, isn't that fucked up that these people don't want they're calling them compulsory human habitation zones, which is like, you mean cities? You mean the places by which our country was had a manufacturing base and developed and cultivated the suburbs you so, you know, hold so dear? It's just an absurd, it's an absurd line of logic, but it stems from the fact that they have to be anti-everything. So present them with whatever facts you have. It doesn't matter. That's the point of this is the dark times for us, is that, you know, 60 years from now, or well, 50 years from now, when the floodwaters are coming higher, they're still going to be denying it if they're still in existence. By then, hopefully, the witch hunt will have already successfully destroyed them, and we will be, you know, going to bunkers in Appalachia and in the Rocky Mountains and stuff like that. But when it comes to this shit, this is where those tactics of on our side, like, we need to employ those tactics of there is simply no capitulating to these dumb ideas that they have, this dumb notion that there isn't such a thing. Because keep in mind, even if there isn't such a thing as global warming or climate change, what harm is there in changing our habits? What is the harm?
One of the Republican supporters, I can't remember his name, he just recently got ousted, but he was one of the few that is in support of doing something about climate change. You know, his argument is that Even if you want to be a fucking moron and you can't understand science, because that's really what it boils down to, is there's certain people who just don't have the intelligence to understand science. So if you can't do that, China is going to be developing a shit ton of sustainable technologies. Yep. That worldwide, because worldwide there's a consensus about climate change that America is against. Worldwide, those people are going to be new markets for those Chinese technologies. So just on an economic level, we have to fucking compete.
Right. Remember how when GM back in the day, well, only a few years ago, rather than jumping on the bandwagon saying, you know what, we need to figure out a way to do, you know, different fuels, different, you know, flex fuel technologies, whatever. Instead, they just pumped out millions of SUVs and were like, fuck it, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, an analogy to this whole thing is sort of like, that's how the Tea Party is. It's like, we could easily be doing the right thing and saying, you know what, look at this shit. China's going to get the jump on us on this. There's a lot. Okay. From a business standpoint, you can make a lot more money right now by becoming a startup in new sustainable technologies like solar energy and stuff like that, developing new solar panels. Whatever the case may be, hydroelectric power, whatever it is, stuff that gets rid of the old guard of, you know, coal, gas and oil. And yet here we are, we're sitting here and they're clutching on to this completely regressive agenda that rather than saying, wait a second, the chink's got the jump on us, dude, we got to get those slopes out of our lives. I'm talking, you have to understand, I'm talking as though I'm one of these people. This is what they call them. They call them coin slot eyes. I've heard it before. It's not the first time that somebody said something like that.
What they've managed to do is large gas-guzzling vehicles and outrageous consumption of anything for the fuck of it has become to them an American ideal. It is like, it is aligned with a patriotic act to have a giant pickup truck and to use that pickup truck to drive yourself to work.
Yeah.
That has become American expression to do that.
Well, and I guess my analogy is simply, the Tea Party is sort of like GM. When the death knell was being rung, they refused to listen.
Yeah.
And instead just brought out and multiplied the same shit that did nothing for anyone. And rather than being, you know, some sort of a progressive movement that suddenly says, well, wait a second. Okay, they're all about this, like, free market business sort of thing. Sustainable technology is where it's at. Why not suddenly say, let's invest in this, and hey, let's invest in high speed rail, let's invest in mass transit that can possibly bring some sort of commerce to cities that are dying. You know, it's like, fuck you people, they just want to see this dystopia, and I'm not a part of that. I can't in good conscience be a part of this dystopian vision. They want everything to be destroyed, deconstructed. They want to be living in this isolationism that I am so against. How do you reconcile that with your own conscience? I'm not built that way. And I don't know what America they're living in, but guess what? This is my America.
I was thinking, if you think about the timeline of the planet, and really thinking about how long billions of years the planet's been in existence, the dinosaurs were around for millions of years, and then you think about us as an organism, and humans, you know, just like a couple hundred thousand years ago appear, and then for us to have eliminated ourselves, the human species is so extraordinary, because if you were to run the timeline, like a time lapse of this planet, the human species would be this extraordinarily bright blip that just exploded and destroyed itself instantly. I mean, it's the most amazing accomplishment that we rose up extraordinarily and then just crashed.
You know, for the sake of sounding like a pothead, Danny Boyle and his adaptation of The Beach had it sort of right when you have, if you remember that movie, The Beach, with Leonardo DiCaprio, and I can't remember who wrote it. What was his name? God damn it. The guy, Alex, it wasn't Alex Garland. What the fuck is that guy's name? Anyway, yeah, Alex Garland. Yeah, he wrote it. Anyway, when you watch that, they return from the beach, which is this pristine sort of amazing place, and they go to they go to Koh Phangan or whatever, wherever the fuck it was in Thailand, and you see these people dancing, and they're dancing to this shitty ass techno music and jumping in the beach, and they're fucking parasites, and that's what we are. We are the Zerg swarm of the planet Earth, yeah. And I'm fully prepared for the Protoss to come and teach us the ways of you know, how to do things correct. StarCraft fans, you'll understand what I'm talking about.
Let's move on to the news. News.
The motherfucking news. All right, so here we are talking about our planet Earth and parasites, and NASA unveiled something this week that I thought was cool, and I've heard so many people think it's not cool, which is weird to me.
There's one story I hope you're going to talk about, and this might be it. So we'll see. If not, I'm going to bring it up at the end of the news.
Okay, well, I mean, it's the only huge NASA story that came out, which is funny because they announced, it was earlier in the week, and in fact, I didn't know about it until my brother told me that there was going to be a major announcement from NASA earlier this week. And the major announcement sort of came on the way that, if you recall, when the Segway first came out, when Dean Common introduced the Segway, it had that same air of like, what is this new thing? It, like, remember the Segway was supposed to revolutionize travel? Remember their stories talking about how highways would be reconstructed? Yeah.
It was classic futurist bullshit. And when it was unveiled, it was like, all right, this is like those rascal scooters I see at 3 a.m. when I'm wasted.
Yeah, it was a fucking big Power Wheels, you know, with a little bit of, you know, if Power Wheels allowed you to shift your ass weight around to make your turns around corners, then that's all it was.
I was more impressed when I saw the 1994 JCPenney catalog and there were moon boots in there that I had seen featured on Wild and Crazy Kids.
What, Wild and Crazy Kids? Wow! And by the way, as a sub note, one of the coolest things of all time, which is, I know everyone will hate me for this, but the guy who actually sort of like financed, I think, the Segway, he died recently by riding a Segway over a cliff. I think that's all too
And of course, what were his last words as he was going over the cliff?
I don't know. What were his last words?
I regret nothing!
Except for this fucking Segway!
I regret designing this thing. I should have made a jetpack.
That poor man, what if his last thoughts went back to the Rocketeer? And that was like, whose last thoughts in this world have ever been the And then the very, very last thought was, but wait, wouldn't his ass go on fire? And that was it. You know. All right. NASA had this same sort of veiled secrecy, and everyone was abuzz. They wanted us all to be abuzz about this announcement. But, okay, so here's the announcement. The announcement was this. They discovered that there were these microbes that are able to exist in arsenic.
Yes, this is precisely the story. This is a fucking amazing... This is perhaps the most amazing news of, like, the last 5 to 10 years.
Yes, and yet I heard so many people talk about the fact that this is stupid. It's bullshit. Like, it's as though people seriously thought NASA was going to come out and say, well, we did an alien autopsy, and guess what? Area 51 told us all about Roswell. You know, it's like they wanted everything to be neatly bundled together to wrap up the past 70 years of UFO paranoia. And that's not what NASA – there's no way that's what NASA was going to do. And yet what they discovered was altogether groundbreaking because, you know, like – For me, biology has sort of been rigid. It's been unwavering in a sense where we know what sort of organisms live and what thrives, and that's what we define the entire galaxy, the entire universe had to follow these principles. So, in other words, when we see far off galaxies, we say to ourselves, okay, only life forms that are
First, you have to explain what the fuck they found, because I don't think people, probably a lot of people don't even know.
Sorry, yeah, no, I presume that our listeners are smarter than they are, but I know you're a bunch of fucking dummies. So let me get this out.
This news, I don't think, was widely reported as it should have been. This should have been the cover of every newspaper.
Yeah, well, okay, essentially what happened was there's a lake, I believe, in California. I can't remember the name of the lake because it's not in the news story in front of me right now. But
Wait. It's something with an M. Mono Lake.
Yeah, okay, so this lake, as far as I know, has toxic levels of arsenic in the lake. So as far as anyone ever knew, in fact, I guarantee you researchers just gave it a pass and said, there's no reason to research this fucking lake. Nothing can live there because no carbon-based life form can thrive in arsenic. Arsenic is poisonous to us and any other species for the most part. And what NASA discovered, though, was that rather than all life composing of the six main elements, which is carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, sulfur, and phosphorus, we now have an organism that no longer needs phosphorus. It actually can survive with arsenic in the mix. And what this does is it opens up entirely new portals into what can actually be considered life within our galaxy. Here we found it in our own backyard, something we never thought would happen. A life form that can thrive on arsenic. What that means is in other galaxies, okay, in the most rigid sense, it means in other galaxies or in other parts of the universe, we can now honestly say, well, if there's arsenic there, there's a potential that there's a life form that can exist. But then keep in mind this, we've spent the past, I don't know, 100 and some years thinking that there's no way it can exist with arsenic. What other elements can, you know, single cell or even, you know, multi-cell life forms thrive in that we don't know about? And so as people play this down, I think a lot of people just look at like single cell organisms and go, who gives a fuck? You know, it's not sentient sort of intelligible beings, but that completely undermines the whole point of this story, which is the fact that if life can thrive in conditions we never realized it could thrive in before, what else don't we realize about life? And that's what is so promising to me. And I love it. And I was enthused. I didn't need to see them drag out, you know, an actual alien. I didn't need that kind of shit. I was excited to find out that something unknown is now known. I don't know. What were your thoughts? What did you think? Okay, let's put it in context. Here you are. I know you're a busy man, but I'm sure you were chopping at the bit. 2 p.m. rolls around on Thursday or Friday or whatever day it was. I think it was Thursday the 2nd they came out with this. It comes around and NASA spokesman comes out and says, well, today we discovered life thrives in arsenic. What's your reaction, Tanner? Go.
Yeah, this effectively multiplies the possibilities of life in an exponential form, which is seriously profound. And it also shows us, what's most exciting about it is, sure, we found out something new, but it shows us how little we actually know about potentials of life in the universe. So, I mean, it has this sort of ripple effect across science and across the universe and our understanding of it, for there to be just wacky ass fucking forms of life all over the place that could draw from ridiculous forms of elements. Yeah. And someone made a reference to a quote that I guess Carl Sagan made about there could be life forms based on silicon and not carbon.
Right.
And this is essentially an analog of that where, I mean, this, because it's an element, I mean, it's even more important because it's an element that we associate with such toxicity.
Right.
That flips this so much on its head.
And consider, too, the fact that there are life forms that are able to exist in acid, which to humans is completely fatal, and, you know, it will eat through your skin, all that other shit. And most recently, with the oil spill, I don't know if they ended up doing it, but I think that there was some sort of a bacteria or parasite or something that's able to live by ingesting oil. You know, these are things that... excuse me. These are things that I think the layperson just they're looking for the big reveal.
They imagine a fucking scientist sitting in some observatory like the Griffith Park Observatory, looking through a giant telescope that has like the little lens at the end. You know, it's this huge telescope with this tiny lens, and there's a scientist looking through it, and what he ends up seeing on the other side is Mac and me masturbating. Right. Like that.
Straight out of a Terry Gilliam film.
Yeah. That's what they want. Because, as we've been saying, another key theme of this podcast has been people are stupid.
Yeah.
And this is another story that illustrates perfectly how people can't... There's something so incredible that gets revealed, but people don't have the intellect to understand how profound this is.
Yeah, and the subheadline to that is, we're not. We are smart because we enjoy this shit. Everyone should be shitting their pants over this, because it really... You know, what it does, too, is it does challenge things like... On a small level at this point, but at the same time on a very large level, it challenges things like the Bible. You know, the Bible is totally predicated on the fact that we're a carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, sulfur mix of a being, even though it never once points any of those elements out because they were too stupid to do any fucking research on that shit. But it really... This could be the beginning of a series of findings that chisels away at the idea of evolution, even, which would be great. See, this is what's so great about the scientific method, because up until now, anyone else in the world would have said, no way, nothing exists in arsenic environments. And yet here we are. Science has readily now accepted the fact that arsenic-based life is a reality, and it will now alter itself to accommodate this. And in doing so, what I hope happens is that we now challenge evolutionary theory. Maybe there's different evolutionary principles associated with arsenic-based life that will give further insight into actual evolution. Maybe evolution is so multidimensional that that what we know as evolution within our own animal kingdoms that exist on Earth is those rules go out the window when it comes to other life forms. I mean, I'm speaking in hypotheticals right now. I'm just saying it's such an exciting prospect to me, and yet people who are holding on to their religiosity so tightly are unwilling to relinquish it, to the point where they would deny in the face of fact that, you know, things like this exist. And I love that I don't have that sort of a crutch in my life, because I'm able to enjoy this sort of thing.
Importantly, we're one step closer to synthesizing predator blood.
Yeah. Well, and do you think there's a potential that the producers of Predator were at one point visited by predators who said, look, you fucking idiots, write a script about us. We live on arsenic, and we don't even know. I mean, that could be something built into the next series of Predator movies. Who knows?
Absolutely.
Okay. In other news, and this can be a quick thing, but I just wanted to give a quick shout out, because this actually does sort of hit, not close to home, but it just hits because it sucks. Leslie Nielsen died, best known for his role as Dr. Rumack in Airplane, but also known for being Lieutenant Frank Drebin in the Police Squad TV show, and then later the Naked Gun series. I know a lot of people don't like those movies anymore, because they're just so, you know, there's something coy and I don't know, not too subtle about them, but I loved him, and I miss Leslie Nielsen already. I think he was a great actor. Poor guy didn't hit his stride until he was like 50, but shit, man. I mean, it just sucks that he's dead. So I just wanted to pass that on to everyone in case they didn't know that he died. Unfortunate circumstances. Okay. two things, because I know we got to wrap up the news here quickly. So it's a fielder's choice here for you. We can talk about Comcast and how they're trying to strong arm everyone into this fucking anti-net neutrality position. Or we can talk about WikiLeaks. Which one do you want to talk about?
WikiLeaks.
Okay. So WikiLeaks just recently dumped hundreds of thousands of fucking memos and confidential statements and secret documents that are troubling to the United States and its allies, because it reveals that the United States has been engaged in a strange network of espionage utilizing its diplomats, and in doing so, it sort of has undermined the credibility of the United States as a diplomatic superpower. You know, some of the stuff that's being said is the kind of stuff that you're not too surprised about. I'm actually not surprised to find out, for instance, that like the Saudi Arabians were secretly telling us to attack Iran or Iraq. That doesn't really surprise me. And in the meantime, they then behind the scenes also fund the people who are attacking us when we attack those countries. But that's not surprising to me. Other things are sort of just superfluous to me. It's like, I don't give a fuck if people masquerade around with a nurse with big titties. That doesn't bother me. But at the same time, this is, to me, a very damaging thing. But in a larger sense, you sent me a great article. I'm glad you sent it to me. And I don't know if you have it still, because I don't. But I think...
Yeah, I'll link it. I'll link it on the show notes with... because it really... Better than all the news coverage, this article that I'll link on the show notes is it really effectively explains what the purpose of this leak was. Because if you look at it, it looks relatively innocuous in that what was released isn't all that important and really doesn't tell anything anybody didn't know.
Yeah, it's just
it just reveals a process. And what this article does is it explains how, given the philosophy of Julian Assange and WikiLeaks, this is just one step in their kind of anarchical attack, really, on what they see as this global conspiracy of governments to hide so much that they operate this conspiratorial network that really isn't democratic and in the interest of people. And that in the view of Julian Assange, it operates out of this breadth of secrecy, to where even mundane bullshit, diplomatic cables, are considered secret and classified. And so what he's attempting to do is to expose that and to make them worried about their secrecy, so that they begin to accuse each other and the conspiratorial network breaks down. And in his view, this will make the world more democratic and free, because these networks will no longer be able to function because of all these, you know, the mundane and the stuff that really needs to be protected will get exposed through this process.
Right. What was interesting to me, and I'm curious what you think about this, because I'm not really sure. I don't know much about WikiLeaks, to be honest, in terms of their organizational structure. I know that they receive information, and I don't think that they are particularly picking on the United States. It's simply that they fell on, based on a lower ranking soldier in the United States Army who had access. He was an intelligence person, but he was still a non-commissioned officer, so he wasn't, you know, some sort of an officer in the Army. But he fell upon this information. He put it on a thumb drive, which is strictly prohibited within the Army to even utilize, and that's how he was able to dispense the information. I don't think WikiLeaks would deny getting anything from China or any other country that would be potentially damaging. I think they're an equal opportunity destroyer when it comes to this sort of stuff. What I found interesting was, I believe it was Julian Assange who described what the conspiracy itself is. And the conspiracy is not the same as what we would define conspiracy as being, or not you and I, but as a culture, conspiracies are organized from the top down. There's somebody in charge, and it just, you know, so if you work your way to the top, eventually the dominoes will fall. A good example of this might be the Richard Nixon, the whole deep throat thing that went on with Bob Woodward and Richard Nixon and the Watergate scandal, where there's clearly a figurehead who can take the fall. And once he does, it's over. Now, there was the description of the, if you take a 2x4 and you punch in a bunch, you nail in a bunch of nails with a hammer, and then you take yarn and just start wrapping it randomly around each piece in the board, and you start to realize how some pieces are completely disconnected from others. So, for instance, if you needed to obtain a piece of information and you wanted to detain a nail in that board, he or she might not be able to be linked to another nail in the board. So there is no hierarchy by which to dismantle the conspiracy. So in the Assange theory, I guess what would be said is that there is no head, no figurehead to the beast. It's simply a network that needs to be exposed all out, which is what this new dump is. It's sort of a way to expose everyone within the conspiracy by this definition. What's interesting to me, though, is that now Julian Assange is being hunted down. He's the most wanted man, I think, on Interpol's list. He's being accused of raping or molesting a young girl. There's all these things going on. I'm wondering, does WikiLeaks survive without the figurehead of Julian Assange? I don't know. Does he have his own conspiratorial network? Or is this the end of it if they catch him?
That will be fascinating. It is fascinating how They're in their relentless pursuit of him, they're almost proving him right.
Right.
That there is a danger to them in exposing shit that appears mundane. And the fact that they're so vehemently pursuing him reveals that there's deeper shit that is threatened by his presence. You know, digging up, because the first thing anyone does to try and bury someone is to dig up like child porn, pedophilia, raping, absolutely attacking the moral character. So the fact that they're digging up that bullshit on him means that they find him incredibly threatening. And it will be fascinating because eventually he's going to be caught.
Yeah.
And it'll be fascinating to see if he has structured his organization in a way that it can survive without him guiding in some sense.
I'm most curious about that. That's all I have really for news, unless you have more about WikiLeaks. I would urge everyone, though, if you get a chance, contact somebody at the FCC. I don't know who you want to talk to, but Comcast is really pushing the net neutrality issue, and I think a decision will be rendered by the time of our already famed Allcapsians meetup. And this is going to drastically impact the way we live in this country when it comes to the internet. And if there's anyone you want to contact, a senator, your congressman, whoever it is, you've got to get the word out to them that it is unacceptable that a corporation dictate that other businesses, that consumers, citizens patronize, will be somehow subject to different rules and regulations. In other words, in this case, Comcast is charging extra for people to stream Netflix because Comcast wants a bit of that business, and they think that Netflix is in some way encroaching. Go ahead.
They're not charging the people extra. They're charging the company that provides the bandwidth. So basically they're trying to eliminate the possibility of companies supporting Netflix. So then Netflix either has to charge you more or fold. Yeah.
Well, that's the point, I guess, is that ultimately the consumer ends up paying more. In fact, Netflix just raised its fee by a dollar. Now, they said that it's because they have more streaming content, and that's fine. I get it. But if that more streaming content comes at slower paces, or if it comes at zero paces, I can't be a part of Netflix. And that's unfortunate because it's not their fault that their bandwidth is being throttled back when I go to their website. It's Comcast's fault, and it's because Comcast wants to, in some way or another, stifle their ability to do business over their networks. And what the issue is, of course, that does Comcast own those cable lines, that network, technically? And the answer should be no, they don't. The people own it, and we demand a service out of it. Comcast merely is the facilitator, and Netflix is the provider of the business that I'm seeking. Anyway, point being, contact somebody. I already called the FCC. Call them up. There's a million places you can go to do this, but call them up. Right now, there's a bullshit thing on the table from one of the guys in charge of this three-person committee. If you can sway the other two guys to tell that other guy he's coming up with a bullshit resolution to this, the resolution being, of course, that Comcast gets their way. if you can sway the other two, we might be able to survive this. If we don't, the internet will be fundamentally altered and we will never get it back. I guarantee you.
All right, and you made reference to the All Caps Gathering. It is happening December 23rd, which is a Thursday, I think.
Yep.
In Ferndale, if you want details, email allcapspodcast@gmail.com. We're going to do a live show. We're going to have people – we're going to put someone in the hot seat, and someone get to do the show intro. It's going to be fun. So just email allcapspodcast@gmail.com for the details.
Culture, I only like real bread. This game's no EverQuest. I only fly first class. My Green Lantern comic collection remains unsurpassed. I think that movie rules.
Our opinions rule.
That album dropped like poo.
God will be our word.
That writer's such a
Vulture.
George Lucas fucked my youth.
So, Culture Today, I'm going to do a video game review, but I want to start off with some quick news. So, a few podcasts ago, I reported about P.T. Anderson, one of our favorite directors, was going to do a movie about Scientology, essentially, fictionalizing Scientology, with friend of the show, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Oh yeah, huge starring, friend of the show. He'll hate you for not knowing his name.
And soon to be friend of the show when he is Hawkeye in the new Avengers movie, Jeremy Renner was going to star in it as well. That movie has mysteriously shut down production. So if you needed more evidence for how Scientology is evil and fascist, that's a really good example. No one can exactly point to why one of the greatest living directors and two of the greatest living actors, and for all intents and purposes, one of the best scripts on the market right now, that movie gets shut down, but it does. But so the good news, though, is P.T. Anderson's prepping his next film, which is based on a Thomas Pynchon novel.
Read this, yes.
Yeah, it was an amazing novelist and famously reclusive. A novel called Inherent Vice, which I haven't read, but I guess it's set from 1969 to 70 and seems like a sort of detective thriller, perhaps. I don't know, something along those lines.
Yeah.
Investigator and drug culture and all this shit. And it's going to star Robert Downey Jr., which another friend of the show and one of our favorite actors. So either way here, we lose out on what would have been an awesome movie. Clearly, this will be a fucking awesome movie. Pumped about this. And for my money, P.T. Anderson's the best director in Hollywood right now.
Yeah.
Before
you move on, did you happen to see the other news that came out about Robert Downey Jr., where he is being considered to play Lestat in the reboot of Interview with the Vampire? I think it's a huge mistake. There's no reason to reboot that movie. It's a great movie in and of its own, in its own right. Yet Anne Rice came out and said that she would love to have Robert Downey Jr. play Lestat, blonde wig and all. And as far as I'm concerned, they fucked up by not making those movies. Neil Jordan should have been at the helm of all of yeah. the subsequent films, and they fucked it up. So,
and clearly, this is just a post-Twilight cash grab. So
yeah. That's for sure. But if they're not going to make the fucking Scientology movie, please, God, do not make a remake of Interview with the Vampire.
Yeah. The other piece of news I wanted to discuss was the rumors about what the third and final Dark Knight movie is going to be about. So there's some strong rumors that it's going to be set, it's going to be based on a Doug Mensch comic from the early 90s, Prey, which features a character, Hugo Strange, which Grant Morrison has recently really revitalized, who's this doctor that's really obsessed with Batman, and basically what he does is mind fucks Batman. That's like his goal in life, is to just fuck psychologically with Batman. And this story then would utilize Tom Hardy, who I love and loved in Inception. He would be playing Hugo Strange, and it would be about, it would jump off from the last film with Gordon and the police force tracking down Batman as a kind of outlaw, and Hugo Strange as part of this conspiracy, fucking Batman over psychologically. Catwoman will make an appearance, and it'll really be a kind of psycho thriller, which is exactly how I was hoping the series would go. Of course, these are still rumors, but in my mind, this is awesome. I mean, this next to the Joker returning or Jeff Goldblum playing the Riddler. I mean, this is as good as it will get, I think. But let's go on to my review. And this is an odd one because I can't really pronounce the name of the game that I want to review. It's a downloadable game available for a pittance on Steam, made by this guy Terry Cavanaugh, and basically he just made it himself, and I think it's sort of based on a Commodore 64 aesthetic. And it's a platformer, and the title of it is 6Vs. So just type V 6 times into Google, and you'll find it. And it's a platformer where there's this loose storyline with rudimentary graphics where you're part of this spaceship and you crash and you went through some dimensional portal, whatever, and you have to rescue the rest of the members of the spaceship. That's really not very important. The important thing is the gameplay here. And all you use are the arrow keys and your space bar. And you have a little guy, and the space bar flips gravity. So you're either on the bottom or the top of the screen. And it involves a Metroid-like map, where you have this giant map that you reveal throughout the game. And you're trying to locate these little teleporters and the rest of your crew. And it has punishing gameplay. Absolutely incredibly difficult little puzzles that involve this gravity mechanic. But it's not, it's punishing in that you die a lot, but then there's a million save points and you automatically regenerate and you end up doing it over again. So you'll get into these situations where you'll have these difficult, mechanically difficult areas that you have to navigate. And you'll be doing them over and over in rapid succession to this point where it devolves into this manipulation of pattern, in a way. And the game is incredible because as I play it, I'm both intensely frustrated to the point where my heart begins to bleed, but also unable to pull myself away from the computer while I play it. And I'm loving it. Absolutely loving this. It's so simple. And it's so boiled down to what the essence of platforming is, that I highly recommend it. If you're just looking for something, for a time killer, that if you're into classic kind of gameplay that is unforgiving and about mastery, but with a rebirth mechanic that makes it a little less punishing than old school games where you'd lose lives and have to restart. This is something that I really, really recommend you get, especially because it's a simple game. It's made by one guy, and it's worth supporting. So, I think the grade I would give it, even though I'm only maybe a couple hours in, I'd probably give it around a B, but it's so cheap, and it's available on Steam. Just get it for the hell of it. Just get it, okay? Highly recommended.
Does it? Okay, so is it? Okay, you can jump from, or you go from gravity to non, or whatever. You go from top to bottom, or whatever on the screen. Is it graphics like Braid was, where it's the side scroller sort of comical looking game? Okay.
Yeah, but now, it's Commodore 64 era graphics, so it's very, very rudimentary. It's focused intently on skill, you know, just mastery of skill, where you'll have to like jump, avoid spikes, go back up, and you have to repeat it over and over and over again until you get it right. And it's so expertly tuned to the point where it's almost measured to the pixel where you need to get your character, and the brutality of it is just brilliant. Not for everyone.
How much is it on Steam?
Let me check, because I got it on, you know, Steam during the Christmas season has so many awesome sales. Right now it's $5. I got it as part of a package of like 10 games for $5.
In fact, a friend just told me that they got Left 4 Dead 2 for insanely cheap.
They had it for $2 at one point.
Okay, yeah, I think that's when he got it, because he was like, oh my god, it was an incredible deal. And I didn't get a chance to get it. Steam is the place to be if you're going to be getting games, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and it's got me... you know, I want to give up computer gaming, but Steam alone has me compelled to stick with the computer, because through Steam, you can buy games and they'll just always be there in the cloud, and you don't have to worry about losing them or downloading or installing them. Well, and carrying games around with you, it's just always there. And whenever you want to play a game, you can install it. Whenever you don't want to play a game, you deinstall it.
Right. But what's also great about Steam is, and I know they do this on the actual consoles like Xbox 360 and PS3, but with Steam, I love the independent community of games, which is, clearly this one's a part of. And it's almost like being on Netflix. It's like, do I want the mainstream Stars Play, you know, that Netflix has, where you go, you know, Stars being the channel, and when you go there, it's a blockbuster movie that came out like a few months ago? Or do I want to go to, you know, find out what's the new independent game? What's something that somebody released that no one else gives a fuck about, or at least at this moment they don't, that's innovative and very creative? So I definitely want to check this game out right now. Just so people know, Battlefield Bad Company 2, the Spacact kit upgrade, I have no idea what that is. That's only $19.99. Lara Croft and the Guardian of Light is $14.99. Fuck that. Sorry. Civ 5, which I can vouch for, is amazing. You have to click for details, but it buy it. It's a great game. Nailed, don't know what that is. That's fucking bullshit. Super Meat Boy, $15. I don't know what that is either. But it doesn't matter. Steam has all sorts of deals.
Yeah, it's badass. And it's really the future of game purchasing. By the time we're dead, everything will be in the cloud, and you'll just purchase licenses. Yeah. All right, let's move on to Wildcard. This is Wild Card, which is a recurring list of games, humorous in nature, that we like to play. And this week we have the fan favorite, Love Hate, affectionately known as the Hot Seat, wherein one of us comes up with a list of 10 random things, fires them at the other, in a rapid fashion, and the other person has to determine on the spot whether they love or hate them and give their justification.
This is so fucking nerve-wracking. I'm sorry. I am not prepared for this, and I just want to give whoever is going to be at the All Capsians event, whoever will be in that hot seat, get ready, dude, because you have no idea what it's like to be on the firing end, or on the, whatever you want to call it, on the other end of the firing squad.
Yeah, I've already had one person tell me that they do not want to be put in the hot seat. I know there's a couple people who want to be put in the hot seat, and one person who definitely does not want to be put in the hot seat.
The key to the hot seat is you can't be a wishwash. You make your decision, you have to be stoic and say that.
Yeah, you have to be confident and just snap judgments.
And that's what I'm going to do. That's what I'm going to give to you viewers right now,
This is a special hot seat, too, because friend of the show, Casey, sent in the first 8 of these.
Holy shit! What is he? He's supposed to be teaching second grade English as second language Mexies. What's he doing with his life right now?
So the first 8 that will come are from Casey. The last 2 I came up with the last one being themed of the season. Okay. Oh,
okay. Well, I hate
this. Yeah. It'll be an instant hate. All right, so number 1, love, hate, dial up modem noises.
Okay, so basically what this comes down to is whether or not am I nostalgic of the dial up internet, or do I completely despise the archaic sound of I hate dial-up internet noises. I can't fucking stand it. And even when I was into, well, even when all I had was my 28, what was it? What were the speeds? 28, 8, 30?
No, I mean, 36. I'm going, go back to 2400, then it was 96, 14.4, 28, 8, 56K.
No, there was a 33.6 between.
Oh, 33.6, yeah, 56. Yeah, yeah. 56.
I had a 33.6, and I remember thinking to myself, I want that 56K because I can't fucking stand the sound of this.
The negligible difference.
Oh my god. Back then, though, that was dumb. Almost.
It was
dumb.
Blazing fast.
Holy shit. Yeah, no, there's nothing worse than dialing up on that shit and then hearing that noise, and especially if you didn't connect. It was leaps and bounds beyond any queue you have to stand in real life. No, fuck that shit.
For me, I hate it because it was a sense of shame I had, because at the time, you know, you're paying hourly. My dad's paying hourly for my AOL use, and every time I fired that modem up, I would be afraid that he could hear and just be like, that motherfucker.
Yeah. Well, I actually, I paid for a separate phone line in my parents' house because I couldn't handle the fact that if you were on it and somebody tried to call, that it would disconnect you.
Yeah.
So I had a whole separate number just so I could have a dial-up modem.
All right, number 2. And this is, you can tell the line of logic for Casey here. ICQ Instant Messenger.
Okay. ICQ, if I recall, had that amazing icon of a flower. And it would like rotate in colors as you connected, and then you would have ICQ partners. See, ICQ went hand in hand with IRC, Internet Relay Chat. But this just in, ICQ fucking blew, and everything the fact that it happened. ICQ is the biggest piece of shit. It was horrible. It was seriously a piece of shit program. I remember. Well, actually, here's the best part about ICQ. Your chat logs back in the day would be saved, and you didn't know that they were being saved.
a wonderful Facebookian breach of privacy.
Yeah, so they would be saved, and the best part was my brother used my computer, and and so he would be engaged in these fucking ICQ epics with women.
Mike, a.k.a. The Doc.
Doc Holliday, as if he was the biggest fan of all time.
Loved Tombstone.
I'm so sorry, Mike, if you're listening. I doubt you are. But
But
the reality was, I would get on there and I would just check those chat logs and see what's doing.
And that, does he know this?
No, of course not. This is a revelation.
All right, next. I fucking hate it too. Next, Necco wafers.
Necco wafers are as close to Necco is close to Necro. This is all about the reality is it's the candy made for the already dead. There is okay. I worked at a party store for 9 years, and in that 9 years, about five different occasions, a person came in to buy Necco wafers, and it was the same person. And they were as close to a corpse as I've ever seen. They were born at least in 1932. They were around for the beer hall putsch. You know, you know what I mean? These people don't have taste in candy. If you said to them, hey, the new Necco wafers is Smarties, they'd be like, those are too tart and tangy. I don't want that. I want something that's completely abysmal to my taste buds. That crunch my teeth and break the enamel. That's what they want in a Necco wafer.
Fun fact, 35% of all Necco wafer consumers are gypsies. Also, Necco wafers are one generation removed from Tums. And Necco, if you like Necco wafers, you probably also like Bob Evans. All right, next up.
All right.
Text-based video games, i.e. Zork.
Okay,
Love or hate!
Okay, well, no, okay. I love text-based video games. Some of my first experiences with video games were text-based. I played a game called Leather Goddesses of Phoebus for a good part of my 11-year-old life. It was totally antithetical to everything my parents preached about no having sex and all. Every other line that I wrote was fuck bartender, you know, fuck toilet seat. Everything was a command that began with fuck this or bang that. I loved text-based games. I love what is it? MUD? Isn't that what it's called? MUDs?
Yeah.
I love MUDs, but wait, what does that actually stand for, though?
Multi-user dungeon.
Dimensional dungeon or something like
no,
that?
No, multi-user dungeon.
Okay, I loved those. I would play those on MIRC all the time. And some of these games are intriguing. I can't even think of some of the other games' names. There's a company that put out a bunch of them. I bought them, and I had them for my shitty-ass, whatever it was, Commodore or whatever it was. But, yeah, no, I fucking love text-based games. Wait, okay, what do you think about text-based games? Are they shitty? Do they have a place in your heart?
I absolutely love them. I think the first game I ever played was Zork, and I remember,
okay,
you know, my dad had this shitty PC, and it was the green and black screen, and there was just this sense of mystery around how the game even operated, and it required so much imagination, but it was also the mythical nature of the computer. When I was so little, it just seemed so limitless in possibility, you know. Next up, Doppler radar.
Oh, I can't stand me that Doppler radar. Well, okay, I hate the Doppler effect. Does that...
No, this is just radar, not the Doppler effect.
All right. Well,
I mean, obviously we all hate the Doppler effect.
I hate Doppler radar, and the reason why I hate it is because I'm beholden to it, and I don't like to be beholden to anything. It's like having a debt to something. And so with Doppler radar, I'm forced to be, you know, sort of corralled into, okay, is the weather coming my way? What meteorologist is basing his entire report on Doppler radar? Fuck that shit, man. You know what? As far as I'm concerned, Doppler radar is a thing of the past. What we need to be measuring is storm intensity via Dorothy from the hit film Twister, we need to have people driving trucks into tornadoes.
Wait. Helen Hunt's name in Twister was Dorothy.
No. That was the name of the thing that contained all of the Christmas ornaments that were supposed to give data back to a computer. It didn't. That's not a real thing. It's what happens in the movies. Her name was something else. But Dorothy was the name of the thing that they put in the back of the truck. And at the end of Twister, Jan de Bont's Twister. Jan de Bont. Wait, love, hate Jan de Bont.
Love. I mean, Speed 2, The Haunting, Tomb Raider, Cradle of Life, Mulan, all amazing.
Yeah, he was cinematographer on Die Hard. I mean, the man has a Blood Rain. I mean, I don't think that's true.
It's Uwe Boll. They're essentially the same person.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I hate Doppler Radar. But I like Doppler 5000. All the previous versions fucking suck.
Wait a second. All you have is 5000, dude, here in Detroit.
I love how news stations advertise that shit as if anyone gives a fuck.
What about the fact that they advertise their helicopters as being better?
until fucking Eyewitness News brands an Apache their traffic copter, I don't give a shit.
Yeah, I want to be in like traffic copter. I want to hear news from traffic copter gook destroyer, you know, like something from the Vietnam era. That's what I want to hear.
I want to see Channel 4 flying Airwolf over the city of Detroit. Next, marathons.
Well, I mean, going back to the ancient Greeks, of course, it's an amazing thing. Now obsolete. Why do I need to run any further than 2 minutes from where I'm at? What's that distance? 2 minutes times I can do about 18 miles per minute, so 36 miles. I'm against anything shorter than 36 miles, which means I'm against marathons.
You must have the legs of Eric Idle and Baron Munchausen. Obscure reference.
I love Baron Munchausen. What a great fucking movie. No, I don't like, you know, marathons are the most vainglorious thing you can ever do. It's never done. I know everyone's like, oh, I'm doing this for people who have terminal leukemia. No, you're not. You're doing it so you can report your time back and be like, oh, I did a marathon in this time. It's never because you cured a blood disease, because this just in, you didn't cure that blood disease.
Yeah, I mean, the reason why I hate marathons is how they've now become this new apparatus by which people stroke their own cocks or rub their own clits. Like, it's simply a way for people to go on Twitter and berate you endlessly about how fucking awesome and fit they are.
It's the benchmark by which you are considered fit, and that's not an accurate benchmark, because people decide to take breaks during during marathons. It's true. People don't go the full marathon. People sometimes go and have a beer, or they have a bagel, or whatever.
All right, next up, white point guards.
Wait, white point guards? I am all for it.
In the vein of John Stockton and Steve
Nash. I was just going to say, John Stockton is perhaps the best. I wish there was a... I'm looking online right now just to see who is... But see, some of these are new people. I don't know. No. White point guards are the best thing ever because... What is that fucking game I used to play on my Sega Genesis? It was like an NBA... I think it was EA Sports game where you would play like the Utah Jazz always had Stockton and the other guy who was...
NBA Jam.
Well, wait, NBA Jam is where you actually did crazy shit. I'm talking about a game that was purely just a basketball game. And it was always a great thing. Okay, here are some great white people. Steve Nash, he's a great point guard. I I think he's amazing. I think Jason Kidd, although he's somewhat black, he's right? Am I right? He's got the freckles of Morgan Freeman on his face. That must mean something. At least in Robin Hood's time, that meant you were black.
Everything I know about history, I learned from Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
All right. Go on to the next one. Yeah, of course. I love it when white people excel in anything.
The best thing about John Stockton was he might be the whitest man of all time. Like, his hair was perfectly barbered. He had those perfect socks and shorts. Yeah, it's just, he was so white. I don't think he ever spoke.
Can you imagine now, being in the NBA now, as a person like John Stockton, where the trash talk would clearly be about his whiteness? What would that be like to be John Stockton as you're going up against somebody who's totally against your racial, you know, predisposition? Not to say that didn't happen back in the day, but it just seems like a different game now than when John Stockton was able to, like, dribble between his feet and then all of a sudden do a three-pointer on you.
Next up, the term finger banging.
Love it. It's the most accurate description of what you do to a vagina with your fingers.
It's pretty much spot on.
Yeah, I mean, when touching a vagina with your fingers, what else are you doing? Caressing? Nobody's doing that. Nobody's gently touching a vagina with their fingers. They're rapidly stroking a vagina. There's no...
I prefer the 19th century term muzzle loading. I just made that up, people.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. Or the 18th century French Revolution term of guillotining, which is where you take one finger, one hand, and between your I'm making this up. Where you take your middle finger and your index finger and you clutch the clit between the two, and then you take your other hand, your right hand, and karate chop the clit.
Yeah. Ladies, doesn't that sound pleasing? All right, next up, mechanical pencils.
Hate them, because they never have enough graphite within them to contain all of the shit I want to say. I am so pissed about any pencil that doesn't have enough lead to make it down to the eraser. End of story.
Absolutely. And the worst part about them, first of all, they break all the fucking time. Yeah. Secondly, there's always that bit at the end of one piece of lead that's a good, like, maybe... one-third of an inch.
And it pushes back in?
Yeah, it's totally useless! Yeah. That's so wasteful!
It's bullshit. I don't want to have to reload. I want to just simply take it down to the very end until the pencil sharpener on the wall will know... When you know it comes to an end is when the pencil sharpener is literally sharpening the whatever the metal thing is going up to the eraser. That's when you know you're done.
Yeah, there's a simple pleasure in sharpening a pencil, and but I will admit that in grade school it was fun to disassemble a mechanical pencil and reload it as if you're loading a gun or something.
Sure,
but that's all right. Last one, real as opposed to fake Christmas trees.
Well, okay, this might cause controversy, but my family was never rich enough to afford a real Christmas tree, so. My experience with real Christmas trees is limited to girlfriends I've had in the past. And in my experience, those girlfriends who had real Christmas trees, they were rich. I hate the rich. I hate real Christmas trees. I hate it. I am the product of a very suburban trailer park lifestyle where you have a tree and you brave the itchy scratchiness of pulling out the fake branches of that fake tree and then decorating it accordingly and then never having to worry about refilling the water or worrying that too many needles are falling to the ground because the tree's dying and all that other shit. To me, Now, if I were rich and I had somebody to take care of it, a real tree is fine because there is a good smell. I do know that they smell delicious. But this just in, there are amazing, I don't want to call them perfumes, but like spray bottles of a Christmas tree smell. So I can have a fake tree up without all the nuisance of a real tree. So fuck real trees. I don't give a shit.
Personally, I love the real tree for the metaphor that it presents in everybody's family room. As the love for your family slowly dies over the Christmas season, so does your tree. And it perfectly represents the destruction of familial love and affection that the Christmas tree levies on everyone around the country. All right, that's your All Caps podcast. If you were keeping score at home, Chris...
I hated 8 out of 10, right?
No, 7 out of 10.
Okay, all right.
Which is
I don't know what three things I loved, but I'm sure I don't like them anymore.
It's about average. We'll see. That'll probably be the last love hate we do until the live show. So we'll see how
man.
That goes.
Whoever is up for that love hate, wait, will that be you and I generating that love hate? Or are we going to take suggestions from the audience?
I think we should generate it.
Okay. All right. We'll do it. I've got plenty of material for that.
Yeah. Prepare yourselves. Go to www.allcapspodcast.com, twitter.com/allcapspodcast. Subscribe on iTunes. Post a written review.
Motherfuckers.
Go to the t-shirt store. Buy a t-shirt. That's all. Bye. Things would be different if you were in my place. This argument would change. Feel like I'm in second grade. She really meant nothing. I was a drunk and an idiot. And now I'm full of shame. And I don't even know her name. Oh yeah, it was Lisa.